This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's 8:35. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris, and I've got Sharad Kutin here with me. Now, a week after U.S. President Donald Trump declared that he would move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, whose members met this week, called on all countries to recognize the state of Palestine and East Jerusalem as its occupied capital. Our Prime Minister, Dato' Sri Najib Razak, was at the extraordinary summit and has called for the pre-1967 borders between Israel and Palestine to be respected.
Any changes in the pre-1967 borders is an infringement of the Palestinian people's rights and their right to self-determination. The final status of Al-Quds Al-Sharif should not be decided on a unilateral recognition.
So to help us assess this move is Victor Katan, Senior Research Fellow at Middle East Institute in Singapore. Sharad?
Thank you so much, Victor, for joining us this morning. I want to start with the Istanbul Declaration, as some are calling it, which recognizes East Jerusalem as the capital of an independent Palestine. Does this declaration have muscle? Will it have muscle behind it? And will it change the facts on the ground for those who live in Jerusalem?
It won't change facts on the ground because, as you know, Israel remains in occupation of East Jerusalem, and that's not going to change without pressure, on Israel. That's going to remain the same. I mean, the Istanbul Declaration, you know, there were strong words that were issued, but mostly it restated existing positions. Most of the members of the OIC already recognize Palestine and already recognize East Jerusalem as the capital of Palestine. So it doesn't say too much. I mean, there's a possibility that they might be considering recourse to international law. Perhaps they'll refer the dispute to the International Court of Justice later on at the UN General Assembly. But so far, it's just strong words.
Now, the OIC meeting is an attempt to show Muslim solidarity with the Palestinian people. But some of the observers are noting that it also revealed regional tensions and rivalries. In particular, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia's delegation was a low-level delegation compared to other countries that sent foreign ministers, as well as, like in Malaysia's case, our prime minister was in attendance. What do you make of this? I mean, this lack of real solidarity among Muslim nations?
It wasn't just Saudi. I think Bahrain and the UAE also sent lower-level delegations. So there's been a split, as you know, in the Arab world. The headquarters of the OIC is in Saudi, and this was held in an emergency summit in Turkey. And obviously there are difficult relations between Saudi, Turkey, and also with the whole issue over Qatar. So, yes, there are divisions. Having said this, the King of Saudi Arabia did come out with a strong statement saying that, you know, Jerusalem was a red line, and recognizing that the Palestinians, this should be their capital city. So if this was held perhaps in Saudi Arabia, we would have seen different people turning up at different levels. So the Arab world is divided, and that's a fact that we have to. That's a reality that we have to address. Yeah.
Now, it's also some reports that noted that in Palestine, in occupied Palestine, the feeling is that the U.S. would never have moved in such a way without the tacit approval or agreement of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. What do you make of such accusations?
It's been denied by it's been denied by Saudi Arabia in very strong terms. Prince Turki Al Faisal wrote a very strongly worded piece in the Los Angeles Times. There was a statement saying that they'd made it clear to President Trump before he even issued the recognition that this was a red line for Muslims. So we're getting different different versions of events, and perhaps that reflects the divisions in the Arab world over this issue.
Now, there was an expectation that perhaps this move would spark a third intifada. But what are the real prospects for violent resistance?
I mean, Abbas is against, President Abbas is against the use of violence. So he's, I'd imagine, unless things change, or unless the Intifada, you know, if you like, unless the uprising turns against the PA, which is possible, we will continue to see low-level protests. I mean, how long this will go, one doesn't know. I mean, Hamas is in a very weak position, given the recent reconciliation agreement, and again the divisions in the Arab world, the role of Egypt. So I don't really see. This may cool down. It may not. There've been protests in the usual flashpoints in Bethlehem and near Ramallah, but these things have been. You know, Israel can contain these. You know, it's got a system in place to contain this. So I don't think it will lead to another intifada. But again, I don't know. I mean, no one knows.
Now, also, there's some of us observers are noting that the Trump administration's move means a permanent loss of influence in the region, especially over the Israeli-Palestinian peace process. That the U.S. is now, and I think President Abbas has said this, the U.S. can no longer be an honest broker in the peace process. Do you think this is a permanent situation? Is it possible to imagine that this will be the new normal? And that all stakeholders might return to the table and treat the U.S. as a broker in these talks?
I don't think it's permanent because Trump is not permanent. You know, he's the current president, but you know, we don't know if he'll be still president next round of elections. But I mean, the U.S. still has the biggest leverage over Israel, and the Palestinians will have to recognize this when the dust has settled. There is really no one else who has the leverage over Israel that would be willing, I think, to take this on. The EU could play a bigger role. They've come out with a strong statement not recognizing any changes. But then on the other hand, the Palestinians want Europe to recognize them as a state, so it's capital in Jerusalem. And so there's a dichotomy there between the issue of non-recognition and actually recognizing the Palestinian state. So I think the Palestinians would want the EU to play a bigger role, but they're also divided. At the council level, I think temporarily, yes, it's a loss of influence. It will be used. It isn't helpful for other issues in the Middle East. But long term, I don't think this will make a big difference.
Finally, your sense of the Trump administration's move, it's seen as a gambit, perhaps masterminded or by Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, the idea being that somehow this would be a game changer, that the peace process was locked in some sort of unmoving situation, and that this was going to move things by changing the nature of the game. Do you agree that this was the thinking behind the U.S. administration's move, and what might become of it?
It's difficult to say what the thinking was behind the move because so little has actually been said about talks between Jared Kushner and Saudi, and they're supposedly coming up with this peace plan and these proposals, which no one has seen. Whether it's been a game changer, well, certainly Trump has enraged a lot of people in the Middle East. So in that sense, it has in a way, put Palestine back at the center stage. Where it hadn't been for some time, or at least temporarily. Whether it will shake things up remains to be seen. I mean, Trump did leave the door slightly open by saying the recognition wouldn't affect the status quo of the holy places or borders. But it remains to be seen how the Palestinians react to that. So far, they've just rejected it, and they haven't kind of pushed back at Trump and said, well, what's in it for us? Which I think they perhaps should think about asking.
Thank you very much. That was Victor Catton, Senior Research Fellow at the Middle East Institute in Singapore.
All right. Thank you, Sharad. And in just a couple of minutes, we're going to be taking a closer look at the changes that EPF has made to its policies, as well as its outlook for next year. So stay tuned to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.